This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome to Health and Living with me, T. Xiao Ik. Every year, reserves in the blood banks tend to run low during the month of Ramadan. However, the festive period that follows after Hari Raya may actually necessitate a greater supply of blood. So donors are encouraged to continue donating blood even during the fasting month. But some of you may have concerns, you know, is this advisable? Is this safe? Well, joining me to help dispel some myths and misconceptions about donating blood during Ramadan is Dr. Noor Azani Binti Azmi, transfusion medicine specialist from the National Blood Center. And she will also share some advice and encourage more of us to go out there and donate blood. Thank you so much for joining me today, Dr. Azani. Perhaps we can start with just a very basic understanding of how the blood center operates. I'm actually curious to find out myself. Does it serve all healthcare facilities across the country, you know, from big hospitals to small clinics, public and private?
Basically, here at National Blood Center, we're responsible to supply blood to 60 health facilities nearby. So both from the government and also private. So what we do here is actually we supply mostly the Klang Valley. What we collect is only for Klang Valley. However, we do process some bloods from other states. Another thing that we do is that we also do the microbiology testing for other states whenever they do collect the bloods and process at their center. But they do send their testing-wise, they do at the National Blood Center. So that's briefly our role in terms of collection and also in testing for the pool of nation.
But what about when there is a need for blood in other states outside of the Klang Valley? Where do they get the supply from?
Okay, so actually, by right, for every state, okay, there is a state transfusion medicine specialist whereby he or she will be responsible for the state. Like I myself, I worked in Terengganu before. So there, I and also the state transfusionist, we are responsible for the collection for the whole of Terengganu. The state hospitals or the state transfusionist will be responsible in terms of organizing and making sure that there is enough blood collected for the whole state. How they do is depends on each state, whether they will include each district as collection sites or they only have one static. Like in Terengganu previously, the state hospital, the biggest state hospital, is the one that organizes for the whole state. But we will work together with each districts. That's roughly how each state works. But whereas for the National Blood Center, we are on the national level. As I mentioned, we ourselves, we collect for the Klang Valley. But whenever there is shortage in other states, we do help out.
So speaking of whether there's enough or not, what is the current level of blood supply in the National Blood Center?
So currently, actually, we can say that it is sufficient. Okay, but as I mentioned, we are responsible for about 60 health facilities nearby, okay, both from the government and also private. So at times, there will be times that it dips, okay? But it doesn't mean that it's in a critical state or not, or what. During the fasting month, what we're forecasting is that during the fasting month in Ramadan and also the coming Shawwal, there will be challenges whereby there's going to be a blood shortage as people may not come forward to donate. Because we believe that during this time, people will go back to their hometown and maybe there will be less time that they would allocate for donation. So it's called a seasonal thing. It's not really all the time that we'll have this a bit of challenge, but especially during times that we have this, long holidays or school breaks, where people will go, go on holidays.
Yeah. And conversely, then when is there typically the greatest need for blood supply?
Actually, we work closely with the hospitals, you know. So we are actually collecting as what the clinician or how they would actually think that is, you know, whenever they schedule operations and all that. So that means we are actually accommodating for that. So we're not actually collecting too much. Okay, it's on a basis that we are actually communicating with the clinicians now. So what we are doing right now is based on the request from the clinicians. Like during the MCO, okay, there was a, they stopped elective cases for a while, right? So during this time, the in terms of the need for blood actually reduced, okay? But now we're seeing full force again in the hospitals. So that's why there will be an increase in terms of the number of bloods needed. We actually work very closely with clinicians. So how we forecast is actually based on the request as well.
When would a blood transfusion be needed? You know, I think it's important also for all of us to understand this could happen to any of us, right? We may go in for a procedure or something may happen and we need a blood transfusion. But when, what might be some of this need, if you can give some examples?
So actually, we have, because we see in the hospital, there are many kinds of patients, right? So there are patients that are regularly transfused, okay? For patients with disease called thalassemia. So these kind of patients, if they are major thalassemia, that means they will need a regular transfusion. So it depends on the level. It can be monthly, 2 monthly. Okay, that's for major thalassemia. Okay, you have also the regular transfused patients, which consist of cancer patients. Okay, or cancer, especially those that are involved the bone marrow. I mean, when involved the bone marrow is actually the place where they produce the blood. So that might impact in terms of the production of the red blood cells as well. So in these kind of cases, these patients also need regular transfusions, okay? Okay, these are what you call a regular transfused patient. You also have patients that are, it might be due to some emergency events, such as accidents, you know, motor vehicle accidents, or you can have like patients going into labor. Okay? Afterwards, the mother bled a lot. Okay? In a situation we call postpartum hemorrhage, these are one of the biggest users for blood. Not just red blood cells are being used for postpartum hemorrhage. You can also use other components of blood, such as the plasma, the platelets, and all that. Okay? So these are one of the frequent cases that we see that do request for blood.
Let's go for a quick break. And when we come back, I'll be finding out more from Dr. Azhani about donating blood during the Ramadan period and what are some general do's and don'ts to make sure that we do donate blood safely. I'm speaking to Dr. Noor Azhani Binti Azmi, transfusion medicine specialist from the National Blood Center. We're discussing what's the supply of blood in the National Blood Center at the moment. It's sufficient, not at critical level, but it's important to ensure that we do still have sufficient supply, especially with fewer people coming forward to donate during Ramadan and during the festive period that follows. So stay tuned. We'll be right back on Health and Living BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Xiao Yik. On the show today with me, Dr. Noor Azhani Binti Azmi, transfusion medicine specialist from the National Blood Center. We're discussing the importance of blood donation, as well as what's been happening during the pandemic and forecasting what will typically happen during the Ramadan and Shawwal months. Blood donations tend to dip during these periods. Some people are busy with a lot of festive activities. There are also some concerns, I think, about donating during the Ramadan month, whether people think it's safe to do so or not. So perhaps we can address that now, Dr. Azhani. Is it actually safe and advisable for those who are fasting to donate blood?
Okay, actually, we do allow Muslims who actually do fast to donate. However, we recommend that, okay, we have certain criteria. What we prefer is that they do donate after they have break their fast. They have to have a bit of a rest and then can proceed with the donation. All right. If we say that they choose to do in the daytime, the maximum time would be actually by 9 a.m. But it must be that they fulfill certain criteria that we do set, such as they have had their sahur or actually the breakfast here early on. It must be a quite heavy one, okay, and make sure that they had quite a lot of fluids before that. But we do not advise this for new donors and females. Okay? So the rest, we advocate actually to be, it's better that they break their fast first before they proceed with a donation. We do serve food like for breaking fast at National Blood Center. So you can do that here at National Blood Center, whereby it's conducive environment. Okay, you have free food as well, and it's very nice food. And you have some, even a bit of desserts and all. So I think better if you choose to do this during the Ramadan time, why not do it at National Blood Center, whereby it's very cozy for the donors to do so. So actually, we close for center at about during this Ramadan, actually by 9 p.m. So we suggest that they do come before for the counseling and all that. Then they can break their fast and then afterwards donate. So other than that, actually, we have Meat Valley. The Meat Valley also closes at 9 p.m. And also we have Puspanita and Putrajaya. Okay, so we close at 8:30. So these are our centers now.
Okay, all right. I think maybe generally also, right, whether or not it's related to Muslims who are fasting or the rest of us, are there other criteria in order to be someone who can donate blood?
Actually, we do set a lot of strict criteria actually to safeguard the donors, okay, as well as the recipients. So, okay, first and foremost, the donors must be healthy, okay? I think probably I would just mention the main ones. Okay, in terms of age-wise, for new donors, we do allow from 17 and 16. If you're a regular donor, it's from 17 to 70 years old. But saying that, those who are 61 to 70 year olds need annual health screening before they can proceed. Okay, so we want to make sure that the donors are actually eligible enough to proceed with the donation, because donation is not without any risk. So we have to safeguard our donors. So if those who are 17, they need a written consent by the guardians. So the weight must be about 45 kg, and the minimum you have to have 5 hours of sleep. And you have to take a meal 4 hours before donations. Okay. There's also what we are also concerned is about the higher risk of transmission of certain viruses or microbes. So that's why those who are coming out to donate, they must not be involved with the high risk activities, such as multiple sex partners, a male sex with male, and you know, they haven't had any history of whereby they use any payment for any sexual activities. Okay. What we advocate is that at least 3 months interval after you donate your blood. So that means if you have donated blood before, so you have to wait 3 months. There are certain cases where we used to allow before 3 months, but why we choose 3 months is because through that we can restore the iron replenishment for the donor. And for the female, definitely you cannot be pregnant, you cannot be breastfeeding. Okay. And if you're having a menses, it must be after your third day, that means day 4 and onwards, you can donate. Okay. So that's the general ones. But having said that, after you have this screening for initial part, you are allowed to proceed with the counseling with the doctors or the medical officers. Then they will ask you a much more detailed history about your health status.
Okay. So does that mean that diseases like HIV, perhaps hepatitis C, similarly, are excluded from being able to donate blood?
Yes, because you have to remember that what we're giving, you can transmit these viruses to the recipients. So we have to safeguard as well the ones who are receiving the blood, or what we call this recipients of blood transfusion. So that means those who they already know, okay, they have even the risk involved, such as I mentioned, the high-risk activities, if they're involved with it, we also do not allow. What more if they already know that they have these infections?
All right. I guess there might be a fear, especially when people read reports about tainted blood, right? What's the process that donated blood goes through in order to ensure that it won't be tainted by any microbes?
Okay. As I mentioned, we actually do testing of viruses or actually microbes after the blood has been collected. So I'll just follow you through how the fate of the blood after being collected by the donors. Okay, so first of all, when the donor comes, okay, our first, what we say is a checkpoint, is actually during the counseling by the doctors. here we would ask certain activities that we can say that would incur risk of these microbes. Okay? That's why the counseling is very important. And as I mentioned, the criteria, after the donor is eligible and the blood has been collected, okay, the next step is actually we would test for microbes and also we would proceed with the processing of the bloods. What I mean the processing of the bloods is that from the whole blood bank, it will become into three components, whether it's red blood cells, plasma, or platelets. At the same time, when we test for the microbes, what we test are actually for microbes only, which are the HIV, hepatitis B, C, and also syphilis. So that's why the details of the donors when they fill in the form is very important, because if there is any positive results, meaning that we would have to call back the donors and we would actually counsel the donors to get the respective treatment and actually refer to respective clinicians if they need to be. Okay, so that means perhaps some of them never knew that they had this infection in the first place. But when we get these results, okay, we will inform them. Okay, this is all done with full confidentiality. So we will not inform the others. Okay, it will only involve the donors. So we would actually call back the donor and we'll have further testing. And mind you, the blood will actually be discarded afterwards. So it would not be used. So that one will actually ensure that the blood is not, I mean, you won't have this tainted blood. So what we're using is actually a very high-tech technology in terms of whereby it can detect at a very early phase.
Okay. What about COVID-19? You know, is there any risk of COVID-19 transmission, whether for donor or recipient?
So actually, there hasn't been any cases actually been reported about COVID being transmitted through blood transfusion. However, we do not take any chances. So that's why we do still take precautions in a way that those who are having COVID-19, we do not allow. So you have to wait until you are 14 days after your recovery. That means after you do not have any symptoms. Okay. If we say that you have a severe COVID, that means you have also lung infection, the deferral time would be actually much more longer. So even though you have risk or you have been close contact, we also do not allow for at least 14 days.
How about when we are getting the COVID vaccinations? Are there risks and any precautions that we need to take as well?
So in general, for any vaccinations that you take, you are not eligible for at least 7 days.
All right, 7 days. Yeah. Are there other concerns that you've heard from people that might make them hesitant to donate blood? Perhaps we can address some of those as well?
Okay, actually about blood donation, actually in Malaysia, there have been particularly a lot of misconceptions. One of the common ones that I have heard before this was whether it affects the weight. Yeah. So actually, it doesn't affect the weight. You know, it consumes a lot of energy. So because of that, they tend to eat a lot afterwards. So sometimes you see that some people do gain weight because the donor, him or herself, thinks that they need to recover back the energy that they lost. So it's not due to the blood donation per se. You know, in actual blood donation, there have been studies that you can actually lose calories during donation of blood. Roughly about 6 to 650. So don't fret about gaining weight during blood donation. It's actually the other way around. But having said that, please do not do it regularly because you want to lose weight. I think that's one of the common ones that I've heard. Maybe some are not aware that they think that actually blood can be kept for a long time. Okay, this is one of the myths also. But in actual, the most that we keep the red blood cells about 42 days, either 35 or 42 days. Okay, that's why we have to always replenish the stocks, okay? Because it cannot be more than 42 days is at the maximum. Okay? Whenever you process a blood also, you can get three components, as I mentioned, plasma, platelet, and also red blood cells. Platelet have actually a very short lifespan, 5 days only. Plasma can be actually stored for years because we keep it in a very cold place as opposed to the rest. Yeah. So some people think, okay, you already donate the blood. They can be kept for a long time. So why do we always need to always, you know, replenish or donate again and again? So this is actually why we need to do that.
Okay, all right. So I know you've mentioned a few places that people can go to donate blood, especially during Ramadan month. There are some extended hours. National Blood Center is open until 9 p.m., Mid Valley as well. And then there's Puspanita and Putrajaya, which is open until 8:30 p.m. But perhaps a website or social media site that people can go to quickly look for information. Could you provide a resource for our listeners?
Okay, I think one of the most active one is actually our social media is through Facebook. Okay, so we do update regularly over there. You can search for Pusat Darah Negara. We also have the website, also Pusat Darah Negara. Both of them would include the places and so the timing for the mobiles that we do conduct daily.
Do you have a final message, Dr. Azhani? A final call out to encourage everyone to donate blood whenever and wherever they can.
This is for all blood donors out there. Okay. First and foremost, I want to thank all of you who have given so much support to all of us. And it's not just for us here, it's for all the patients out there. And remember that whenever you donate, it might be that you are actually giving to another person who's elsewhere in another state. So you can imagine that just giving your time for roughly about 30 minutes of your time, you are actually can give the gift of life to another person. So with that one blood bag, we are actually helping three lives out there. Okay, so for all those of you who have never tried before because of some personal reason or maybe just scared of the needle, why not take the chance to donate? And perhaps you never know, it's going to be one of your usual practice afterwards.
Okay. Is it painful? Is it any more painful than, say, going for a vaccination jab, you know?
Okay, I'm actually a donor myself. Haven't donated before. It is a bit painful, but it's just mild pain. To me, it's considered mild. It's just that sometimes you just get scared of the needle because it's quite big. So my advice is that if you do not like the needle, just look at your friend out there or just look at the staff nurse. Okay, at the same time, just maybe perhaps converse with staff nurse just to alleviate the, you know, the anxiety. It's not as painful as you think. It's actually all in your mind. Having said that, I'm one of those who are actually scared of needles despite being a doctor. Because of that importance, I forego my anxiousness towards the needle.
All right. Thank you very much. I've been speaking to Dr. Nora Azhani Binti Azmi, transfusion medicine specialist from the National Blood Center, about the importance of donating blood and why you should do it. Even though it's fasting month, you can donate blood as well. Check out Pusat Darah Negara's website or Facebook page to find out more information about where you can go. This has been Health and Living on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.